Last month, my wife June and I attended a small but very wonderful Episcopal church on the Kitsap Peninsula. There were about 30 or so in this mainly older congregation, yet there was a babe in arms and a young middle school age youngster, but graying hair, my own included, seemed to be the norm. And that Sunday was the feast of the baptism of our Lord, one of the 4 days appointed to baptize new Christians. But at this small mission on the peninsula, there were no baptisms. There was no wonderful celebration, as no doubt you had here on that Sunday, a time of joyful sharing of what was happening, of water poured, oil administered, crosses signed. At this small mission, we simply focused on our own reaffirming of baptismal vows. We simply stood and recited those vows. Will you strive for justice and peace among people? Will you persevere in resisting evil? And after we'd responded to them all, the priest sprinkled us with water. Will you strive? Will you persevere? In our society today, we're seeing an almost universal search for spirituality, a searching of some sort or form of spiritual fulfillment. Yet, at the same time, there is an apparent marked disinterest in any specific source of spirituality that might make us ask questions, uncomfortable questions, or a spirituality that makes judgments, no judgments, a spirituality that does not demand any responsibility from us. In this morning's first reading, God exclaims to Israel through the prophet Isaiah, "Day after day they seek me and have delight to know my ways. But look, you serve only your own interests." And then the prophet goes on to expose the great gulf between religious observance and actual conduct. It's not that Israel is irreligious, but they want a pleasant and easy religion that gives them a comfortable relationship with God. And the prophet goes on to describe the marks of true religious observance and conduct. Loose the bonds of injustice. Let the oppressed go free. Share your bread with the hungry. Bring the homeless poor into your house. Cover the naked. Not hide yourself from those in need. Do you see the relationship here with those promises, those statements, and the relationship with your own baptismal promises or the reaffirming of your baptism? Isaiah describes the role of Israel as a universal role, not simply a personal one, but a vocation of the whole of Israel, the whole of God's people. And today, the present day manifestation of God's Israel is the church. It's challenged to be the salt of the earth, to be the light of the world. One of the great challenges or hurdles we face today is really the ease of being a Christian, of it being almost casual, no big deal. We ask the local priest to baptize a child, often with no real appreciation of what we're committing that kid to be or to do. Hopefully, with adult candidates, have a better sense of what's involved. But even then, we tend to think in terms of what might be called Christianity light. I don't mean to be casual or just dismissive about this. Most of us do have strong beliefs. We do say our prayers, and we do practice our faith. We do mean what we say when we respond to those baptismal examination questions. I will with God's help. Now, during these past weeks, these past Sundays, the underlying theme has been one of discipleship, of making true our baptisms, of showing forth the Christ in our lives. We first heard of John the Baptizer coming to the close of his ministry, of preparing society for radical change, of his pointing to Jesus as the Messiah. We hear the call of the first apostles, Andrew and then Peter. We hear of Jesus grappling with his own calling. We call it the temptations. We hear of him forming his first community when he's out on the lake shore recruiting. We hear of, or last Sunday, we heard the start of his preaching ministry, his teaching, when we heard the Beatitudes. And if you were here in church last Sunday, I suggest you really heard the Beatitudes, perhaps really for the very first time, as our own Deacon Earl proclaimed the Beatitudes with power and deliberateness. And so today, our discipleship is taken to an even deeper level. It's almost a cliche for us to call ourselves disciples, to call ourselves followers of Jesus. We don't necessarily use that type of language or those words or say it that way. And collectively, it's easy to call ourselves the church. And if we're going to do this, we need to look more deeply into just what exactly that means. You and I live and move and have our being in a society and a culture that takes an awful lot of this for granted. We hear it said a lot of the time, well, we are a Christian nation. Really? And it's hard to separate being an average, everyday Christian from being an average, everyday member of society. But do our baptismal vows allow for that duality? What we're currently experiencing in our country calls this question into sharp focus. Or to put it another way, where does our ultimate loyalty, allegiance lie? Where does our ultimate allegiance lie? And if we put this question against what we promised in baptism, where does that leave us? There's a classic book entitled Resident Aliens, A Provocative Christian Assessment of Culture and Ministry. It's written by two outstanding theologians, Stanley Hauerwas and William Willimon. You can Google it. It's worth reading. And in the book, they speak to us as being aliens in today's world. And again, earlier this week, the Deputy Secretary of State for the Vatican, when asked about the immigration ban, said it distresses us. There is worry because we are messengers of another culture. Now, in the interests of full disclosure, and as many of you know, I have posted and continue to post on my concerns about the election and the aftermath on Facebook and on my blog, Aft Deck Musings. I've railed against the Cathedral of Saints Peter and Paul in Washington, D.C., most commonly known as the National Cathedral, for their choir singing at the inauguration ceremony. June and I were part of the Women's March, the one in Port Townsend, with over 1,000 marching. And before the march even started, there were 5 busloads of people from Port Townsend heading here to Seattle to take part in your march. My wife and I now pledge to the ACLU and to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Perhaps small steps, but what will be required next is still unfolding for us. And yes, we'll register as Muslims, if needed. If we're true to our vows of resisting evil, of striving for justice and peace, of proclaiming the good news of God alive in the world, if we are to be disciples, then there is an imperative, a duty of witnessing, of being prophetic. And yes, that means standing apart from the institutions and forms of nation in order to witness our faith. Now, this isn't political or partisan. It's far, far deeper than that. Last month, we read of the start of the dismantling of the nation's health care program, which, as it moves forward, could well mean the loss of care for 24 to 30 million people. That's 4 times the population of this state. We read that the Senate voted to end coverage of pre-existing conditions, veterans' medical benefits, and aid to rural hospitals. We read of over 700 hate crimes recorded since the election, most commonly occurring in K to 12 schools and universities. We read of Latino children afraid to go home after school because their parents might not be there. And permission given from the campaign rhetoric for Islamophobia, for bullying, for intimidation, and for the resurgence of white supremacy and bigotry. We read of mosques being torched. We witness the cruel and evil religious discrimination of Muslims with the executive order on immigration. Last December, December 20th to be exact, 6 weeks ago, this cathedral issued a powerful statement, renewing our covenant, a statement of commitment and action. And in this, you reaffirmed your commitment to respect the dignity of every human being, to strive for justice and peace among all people, and to seek and serve Christ in all persons. In this statement, still dramatically nailed to the cathedral's front doors, I think our Lutheran brothers and sisters would love it. In this statement, you state that among other issues, you denounce the defamation and banning of Muslims, and that you will seek to disrupt any attempt to require registration of Muslims, as well as naming sexual assault for what it is, a sin and a crime. This document has gone viral, not just nationally, but internationally. And now you're organizing to put action to these words in 9 primary areas. This is prophetic witness. This is discipleship. And I'm so proud that this is our cathedral, and so proud of its leadership, lay and clergy. I'm sorry Steve wasn't here to hear that. Perhaps the most telling comment that I've read these past weeks comes from a young man who writes about the inauguration, in particular, the participation of the National Cathedral Choir. And he writes, "If the church is to be true to the gospel of Jesus Christ and to uphold its baptismal vows to resist evil, then the choir should not participate. And he goes on to write, "Also, as a millennium, I find that my disillusionment with the church, which anecdotally is shared by many of my friends, comes from a watering down of the gospel and the endorsement of anti-Christian beliefs and messages, whether through the bland nothingness of mainline Protestantism, the capitalistic heresy of prosperity gospel, or the homophobic cultural religion of fundamentalism. If the church were to survive, it would be because the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and not because of some wishy-washy, lukewarm, Laodicean message of welcome that forsakes our duty to perfect prophetic witness." Prophetic witness has long been the witness of the church, whether in recent times through the civil rights movement or the peace movement, in times past during the abolition of slavery, our current political direction, and that of the Jesus movement, as proclaimed by our presiding bishop and our own bishop, are two movements morally, ethically, and biblically at odds. So, where do you stand with your baptismal vows? One option is to act from them in your own way and in your own space. Another, if you find this uncomfortable or contrary to your own values or understanding of the gospel, if you have disagreement, then we need to talk. We need to give good opportunity for you to discuss this with your neighbor, to wrestle with the discomfort and yet the light of the gospel, in the light of the gospel. For it's in the good news of the gospel that we might find each other and find our calling. You and I are called to be the salt of the earth. But it's not good enough just to be the salt, for the value of salt appears only when it's used. We're called to be the light of the world, but it's not good enough just to be a light if that light is kept hidden. We are all a people of God, and we're a people who gather around this table, not for solace only, but for strength, not for pardon only, but for renewal. It is in this that we find our true humanity, and it's in this that God finds us. So, as you think this morning back to your baptismal vows and promises, to your discipleship, what are you going to do? And where will you be? Amen.